So imagine that there's no countries, and it's not hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. So tomorrow is Memorial Day. And do we have anyone who has served in the services? If so, I'm going to invite you in the cyber sanctuary or here in the sanctuary to stand so we can honor you and give thanks for your service. I know there's one person. Thank you. So Memorial Day is usually a day that is known for picnics, for barbecues, for gatherings. The businesses, government businesses are closed. It's the official start of summer, right? And yet, Memorial Day is so, so much more. But that's really what we tend to know about Memorial Day. But how many of you know when Memorial Day started, who started it, and where? We got one person. Awesome. Two. Awesome. So this is going to be a little bit of a history lesson because I think it's really fascinating to learn about what this holiday is because, and there's different stories, but I'm going to share with you this story about the Remembrance Day. And it started actually as known as Decoration Day. So I'm sharing with you the writings by a man who is named is David Blight. Blight is a professor of American history at Yale University and the director of the Gilder Lemmer Center for the Study of Slavery. So he might know a little bit. He might have done some research. He's the author of many books on U.S. history. And so he wrote this, and it touches my heart to find out some things that I wasn't really aware of, and I think it's important, especially in our day and age, and it's always been important, to really tell a story that probably is the actual true story of Memorial Day, just saying. So it was at the end of the Civil War. The dead were everywhere. Some were in half-buried coffins. Some were just unidentifiable bones strewn in the fields of Virginia and Georgia and other states. The Americans, North and South, faced this enormous spiritual and logistical challenge of how to memorialize those that had given their lives. The dead were visible by their massive absence. Approximately 620,000 soldiers died in that war. 620,000. Now listen to this. American deaths in all other wars combined through the Korean conflict totaled 606,000. If the same number of Americans per capita had died in Vietnam as died in the Civil War, 4 million names would be on the Vietnam Memorial. 4 million. Do you know how many is on there now? 58,000. Okay, that just staggers my brain. I can't even fathom what this is about. So after a long siege, a prolonged bombardment for months all around the harbor and many fires, the beautiful port of Charleston, South Carolina, where the war began in April of 1861, lay in ruin in the spring of 1865. The city was largely abandoned by the white residents by late February, and among the first troops to enter and march singing liberation songs was the 21st U.S. Colored Infantry, their commander accepting the formal surrender of the city. Thousands of black Charlestonians, most of them former slaves, remained in the city and conducted a series of commemorations to declare their sense of the meaning of this war. the largest of these events, unknown until his research, took place on May 1st, 1865. It was during the final year of the war, the Confederates had converted a racetrack, a planter's racetrack, the Washington Racecourse and Jockey Club, into an outdoor prison. Union soldiers were kept in horrible conditions in the interior of the track, and at least 257 died of exposure and disease, and they were hastily buried in a grave behind the grandstand. Some 28 black women went to the site and reburied the Union soldiers properly, and they built a high fence around the cemetery. Then the black Charlestonians, in cooperation with the white missionaries and teachers, staged an unforgettable parade of 10,000 people on the slaveholder's race course. A New York Tribune correspondent who witnessed the event said, "A procession of friends and mourners as South Carolina and the United States had never seen before." So it was 9 a.m. on May 1st, a procession started, led by 3,000 black school children carrying arms of roses and singing John Brown's Body. The children were followed by several hundred black women with baskets of flowers, wreaths, and crosses. Then came the black men marching in cadence, followed by contingents of Union infantry and other black and white citizens. And so as many as could, they gathered around the cemetery fence enclosure, and the children sang, "We rally around the flag and the star-spangled banner." And then some of the ministers read some scripture. Following the solemn dedication, the crowd dispersed into the infield, and they did what many of us do. They had some picnics. They listened to some speeches. They watched the soldiers drill. The war was over, and Decoration Day had been founded by African Americans in a ritual of commemoration and remembrance. Officially, as a national holiday, Memorial Day emerged in 1868 when General John Logan, the commander-in-chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, called on the former Northern soldiers and their communities to conduct ceremonies and decorate the graves of their comrades. Over time, several other American towns, North and South, claimed to be the birthright of Memorial Day. But all of them commemorate the cemetery decorations from 1866 and the pride of place as the first large-scale Decoration Day goes to the African Americans in Charleston. Did any of you know that? Did the people that said that they knew that? Okay, you, I bet you did, Dominique. Good. Yeah, you know, the things that you don't learn, you're not taught. I'm so grateful that I get to do research and then I get to share it with you. And so that you may have a greater understanding. So Memorial Day is actually, when did it become official? Anybody know that one? I know, history wasn't my thing either. I wanted to be in the day and now, but history has some bearing on what's going on in our world. So it was in a joint, not in a joint that you smoke, but a joint. So I don't know who's up here. You know, my inner teenager just popped out. Down, kid. So in a joint resolution on May 11th, it wasn't until 1950 that the Congress requested the president to issue a proclamation calling on the people of the United States to observe each Memorial Day as a day of prayer for permanent peace. Permanent peace. Presidents ever since, including President Barack Obama, have obliged with such an annual proclamation in the days just before the late May holiday. In addition to the day of designation, these presidential proclamations have also prescribed a specific time period. So I know you're making note of this tomorrow when you're in the midst of your whatever activities. Traditionally, at 11 a.m., each locality, wherever you are, as a time for Americans to unite in prayer for peace. So, I have a prayer for peace that I'm going to share with you now, and I have copies of it that if you care to take it and use that as your prayer tomorrow. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes and just take a breath. This is entitled Prayer for All Those Trying to Keep the Peace by Frederick Roussat. We remember in our prayers this special day all those military personnel who died during wartime, putting their lives on the line for their loved ones and the cause of freedom. We are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. We also cannot forget the many combatants who died in the line of friendly fire and the ordeal their families went through to find out the truth. We are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. We are grateful for the bravery and conviction of nonviolent men and women who refused to go to war and suffered the consequences of their stand. We are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. We respect all those resilient souls who have spent their lives protesting against war and paid the price with their own loss of freedom. We are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. We mourn the deaths of innocent civilians caught in the crossfire of war. We remember as well the animals, plants, and waters destroyed by the weapons of war. All they wanted, all we wanted, was for the combat to cease so they could live with dignity. We are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. On this Memorial Day of Remembrance and Reconciliation, we are confident that God has taken all these men, women, and beings into her warm embrace. We hold them all in our hearts and are thankful to them for trying to keep the peace according to their inner lights. And so it is. According to their inner lights. I love that line, and we are thankful to them. We honor and we salute and we remember all the sacrifices of those who have given and lost their lives in war. We may never know their names, yet each and every one of them has left a legacy, has given us freedom. And I didn't write this down, but I took a picture of it. And it's called It Is the Soldier. It is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us freedom to demonstrate. It is the soldier, not the lawyer, who has given us the right to a fair trial. It is the soldier, like all veterans, who salutes the flag, who serves under the flag, and whose coffin is draped by the flag, who allows the protester to burn the flag. Right? Go, what? Okay, so we maybe don't think about it, but the legacy for the men and women who have fought for freedom. And I hate fighting. I can't even understand why our mentality has to resort to war. And yet, that's the way that things have been since the beginning, I guess, of time. So, legacy, to be remembered. These folks gave their lives, and they left us a legacy. What is the definition of legacy? Well, it's the gift of property, or personal property, money by will or trust. It's anything that's handed down by the past, given from an ancestor or predecessor, and something that is part of your history that remains from an earlier time. Basically, legacy means to be remembered. And every one of us will leave a legacy. You cannot not leave a legacy, because everything you do affects others. Now, people may never know your name, and that's okay, but you're leaving a legacy. And that's what I want to impress upon you today, is what is your legacy? What do you want to be remembered for? You know, we're talking about memorial and death, and what if it was, what would you write if you had to write your own eulogy? I got to do that exercise in a class. You know, it's not really about death, but death gives us the impetus to be, I got today. This is the only day I have. This is the only day you know you have, this moment. You don't know when your expiration date is. I don't know when mine is. I have to tell you, there was a little boy named Alex, and on Memorial Day, he was at church. And he saw this plaque up on the wall, and it had these names and all these flags, and he's staring at this plaque for the longest time, and the minister finally comes up and goes, "Good morning, Alex." And he goes, "Good morning, Pastor." And then the pastor says, "Do you know what that is?" And he goes, "No, I was wondering what that is." And the pastor said, "Well, that's the memorial for all those who died in service." And they looked at that soberly. And finally, little Alex said, "Which service, the 9 o'clock or the 11 o'clock?" It's Memorial Day. What do you do? So my legacy is that I made you laugh sometimes, right? So legacy, we may know people that have legacies. Tina Turner, did she leave a legacy? Yes. How many of you knew who Alexander Hamilton was before Hamilton came out? A few of you? Okay, well, good for you. I certainly didn't remember who, and I got to go to see Hamilton on Friday. Wow. And so, but they mentioned legacy at the end. So we're leaving a legacy all of the time. And again, you may not know somebody's name. There's a person, how many of you know Helen Street Durbin? Very good. You don't. I didn't figure you did. Now, Helen Street Durbin was a Center for Spiritual Living minister in Hawaii, and she spoke at the Huntington Beach Center for Spiritual Living, and I was a practitioner there, and I worked the night shift at a group home for abused and neglected kids, and I was cleaning the kitchen, and there was a little cassette player. This is back in time a little bit, and I found in the cupboards, in the back of a cupboard, some cassettes, and I thought, well, while I'm working in the middle of the night shift, I'll put that in and I'll listen to something while I'm cleaning the kitchen. And Helen Street Durbin gave a talk. And in that talk, she said that she lived with the assumption that the universe was absolutely crazy about her. And she called God her big sweetie. Well, I really liked that idea, to think that the universe was absolutely crazy about me. I'm going to live with that assumption. And I started to live by that assumption, and great things would happen because it's all in your mind. And if you live with the assumption that the universe is absolutely crazy about you, you'll see evidence. Now, you could do the opposite. The universe is out to get you. Guess what? You'll see evidence. Now, why I even share this with you is because That stuck with me. And if you ever call me on my phone and get the voice message, you will hear me say, and remember, the universe is absolutely crazy about you. Now, Helen Street Durbin, when she gave that talk, had no idea that she was leaving a legacy that I was to pick up. Her legacy of those words lives on. And it goes on from me because there's other people that are saying the universe is absolutely crazy about you. That's an example. You don't know what you do or what you say is what difference it makes. You may never know. But know this, you're making a difference. It could be positive. It could be negative. So we know the famous people that have legacies. However, how many, and here's another one for you. How many of you know of the names Norman Borlaug or Gavrilo Pasipil, something like that? Yeah, all of you knew it. Well, forget about it. I won't tell you. So each of these men changed the course of history and shaped the world as we know it today. It was in June 1914, that the Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were gunned down. That incident sparked World War I, which killed nearly 20 million people. World War I led directly to World War II and deaths over 60 million. All that death and suffering goes back to one assassin's gun. And that assassin's name was Gavrilo Princip. That one moment, that one man changed the world forever. He was arguably the most consequential person of the entire 20th century because of what he did, yet no one remembers his name. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Norman Borlaug, known as the father of the Green Revolution. His work in agriculture led to dramatic increases in harvest yields in some of the most desperate places on earth. He is considered to have saved over a billion lives. About 15% of the people on the entire planet owe their lives to Borlaug. But how many remember him? Right? They may not remember your name, but you are having an influence. You are making a difference. I'm making a difference. I don't know what I say, do, and it's affecting. You're leaving a legacy. What I'd love for you to do this week is to consider, what is my legacy? What do I want to be remembered for? Okay? Would you do that? Think about it tomorrow after you do your prayer for those that have served, your prayer for peace. Think about that. What would I like to be remembered for? I'm Reverend Yippee-Doo, so that's word. You know, I'm good. I mean, there's people that are making a difference. One person isn't in the sanctuary, but she's listening to this talk. Her name is Wanda Brown. She's in the office working. She's making a difference. She's leaving a legacy. The previous minister, Brendolyn, left a legacy. I thank Brendolyn for the work that she's done. So what is your legacy? I'm going to finish today with a story. You like stories? Want cookies and milk with that? Or cookies and coffee? I don't do milk, but cookies, yes. So this is called A Teacher's Story. Like most teachers, Mrs. Thompson looked at her students and said that she loved them all. But that was impossible because there was this one little boy who sat in the front row, slumped in a seat. His name was Teddy Stoddard. He didn't play well with other children. His clothes were messy, and he constantly needed a bath. It got to the point where Mrs. Thompson would take delight in putting X's on his paper and putting a big, fat F on the top of the paper. In that school, the teachers were required to review each child's past records. And she reviewed Teddy's last. She was in for a surprise. His first grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is a bright child with a ready laugh. He does his work neatly, and he has good manners. He's really a joy to be around. Second grade teacher wrote, Teddy is an excellent student, well-liked by his classmates, but he's troubled because his mother has terminal illness and life at home must be a struggle. His third grade teacher wrote, his mother's death has been hard on him. He tries to do his best, but his father doesn't show much interest, and his home life will soon affect him if steps aren't taken. His fourth grade teacher, Teddy is withdrawn and doesn't show much interest in school. He doesn't have many friends, and he often sleeps in class. By now, Mrs. Thompson realized the problem, and she was ashamed of herself. She felt worse when her students brought her Christmas presents, wrapped in beautiful ribbons and bows, except for Teddy's. His was very clumsily wrapped. Mrs. Thompson took pains to open his in the middle of all the other presents, and some of the students started to snicker and laugh when she found a rhinestone bracelet with stones missing and a jar of perfume with only a quarter of perfume in there. However, she stifled the kids' laughter as she exclaimed, "This is beautiful," and she put it on and she dabbed some perfume on her neck. At the end of the school day, Teddy stayed and he came up to her and said, "Mrs. Thompson, today you smell just like my mother." After the children left, she cried for at least an hour. On that day, she quit teaching math, arithmetic, writing, and reading. She began to teach children. Mrs. Thompson paid particular attention to Teddy at this point. As she worked with him, his mind seemed to come alive. The more she encouraged him, the faster he responded. By the end of the year, Teddy had become one of the smartest children in her class, and despite her lie that she would love all children the same, Teddy became teacher's pet. A year later, she found a note under her door from Teddy telling her that she was the best teacher that he'd ever had in his whole life. 6 years went by before she got another note. He had finished high school, third in his class, and she was still the best teacher he'd ever had in his whole life. 4 years after that, she got another letter saying that while things had been tough at times, he'd stayed in school, stuck it out, and would soon graduate from college with the highest of honors. He assured Mrs. Thompson that she was still the best and his favorite teacher in all of his life. Well, you know it. 4 years, another letter came. This time he explained that after he got his bachelor's degree, he decided to go a little further. The letter explained that she was still his best and favorite teacher in his whole life. But now his name was a little longer. The letter was signed Theodore F. Stoddard, M.D. The story doesn't end here. You see, in another letter later that spring, Teddy said he met this girl and he was going to be married. He explained that his father had passed a few years before, and he was wondering if Mrs. Thompson would sit in the place at the wedding that was usually reserved for the mother of the groom. Of course, Mrs. Thompson did. And guess what? She wore that bracelet, the one with the rhinestones missing, and she made sure she was wearing the perfume that Teddy remembered his mother wearing on that last Christmas together. They hugged each other, and Dr. Stoddard whispered in Mrs. Thompson's ear and said, "Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for making me important and letting me know that I could make a difference." Mrs. Thompson, with tears in her eyes, whispered back, "Teddy, you have it all wrong. You're the one that taught me that I could make a difference. I didn't know how to teach, until I met you. Legacy. Mrs. Thompson had a legacy because she made a difference, but who had the greater legacy was Teddy, that he left a legacy for her. He taught her how to teach. Everything we do has an effect. So we need to be mindful of how we're being in the world with ourselves and with each other. It only takes one moment in time to change everything. So what is your legacy? What do you want to be remembered for?